Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. There is a confluence of events right now in the eternal Israeli-Palestinian conflict that could lead anywhere from hope to gloom. Sunday's incidents at multiple Israeli borders indicate a new kind of Palestinian activism. Prime Minister Netanyahu is coming to meet with President Obama Friday after the president gives a major Mideast speech on Thursday, while the Palestinians push for statehood at the UN. What is America's role in these fast-changing developments during this Arab Spring? Can the U.S. influence events for the better for all concerned? Let's get a Washington take from Nathan Gutman, Washington correspondent for the Jewish newspaper, The Forward. Hello, Nathan. Thanks for doing this. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
Are Israelis and Palestinians on a new kind of brink? First of all, even by looking just at today's New York Times, I see statements by Netanyahu about what he is and isn't willing to offer Palestinians, with Hamas and Fatah uniting. And I see the op-ed page where Palestinian Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas makes his pitch for United Nations recognition of a Palestinian state with or without an agreement with Israel. How new a landscape is the decades-old conflict facing right now?
Well, I think definitely it is facing a new landscape, mainly because it seems that both sides are now in talking about a peace process or a resolution of this conflict that is not going through negotiations. We saw in President Mahmoud Abbas's op-ed today in the New York Times, he wants to seek Palestinian statehood not through negotiations with Israel, but rather through recognition by the United Nations General Assembly. This is a path similar to the one Israel pursued back in 1947. Abbas believes that is the only way he can bring Palestinian statehood about. Now, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu on the other side is still calling, of course, for negotiations with the Palestinians, but he has a caveat now. He says if the Palestinians are going for a unity government with Hamas, this is not a government we can talk peace to, because Hamas doesn't even recognize Israel's rights to exist. So it seems that even though we're talking for years about stalemate in the Middle East peace process, now we're even a few steps back, because even the stalemate was more than we have right now. Right now, we don't even have any talk about negotiations.
And into the midst of this, President Obama plans a Middle East policy address for Thursday before he receives Netanyahu on Friday. What do you know about what the president is planning to say?
Well, we don't have many details, but it seems to be clear by what we're hearing here in Washington that President Obama will not focus on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict in his speech. The purpose of the speech is to try to set out an Obama doctrine for the Middle East in light of what they call over here the Arab Spring, this popular uprising in the Arab world that's leading to democratic revolutions in some of the countries. President Obama came under fire from critics in the past for not presenting a coherent doctrine for dealing with these popular movements in the Middle East, because we saw on the one hand one way of dealing with Egypt, another for dealing with the Gulf state, a third for dealing with Libya. So President Obama will try to shape all this into one doctrine that would explain to the world how the U.S. sees this shifting reality in the Middle East.
Omitting the Israeli-Palestinian conflict?
Not omitting at all, actually mentioning the Israeli-Palestinian conflict in this context, but not presenting new ideas. There was some expectation that President Obama would use a speech to come out and say, we need to solve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict in order for the whole region to move forward, and in order to take away this excuse from Arab dictators that for years denied rights from their own people because of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. So there was this expectation that he would come forward with a plan. How do we get from where we are now to a Palestinian state, to a negotiated solution? But the sense now is that President Obama would stop short from actually making any suggestions. He would just speak of the principle of the need to resolve the conflict. Maybe we'll mention the need to resolve it based on the 67 borders with land swaps, which is something the administration has already said. But he will not come forward with an Obama plan.
Who likes the fact that he's not going to, and who doesn't like the fact? I feel like I've been hearing mostly progressives, mostly people on the Israeli and American left saying come on, Obama, this is your moment. You have to step up. Everybody knows what the outlines of a peace plan would actually be, what kind of borders, what kinds of land swaps, what to do about Palestinian refugee families, all those things. You, Obama, have to lay it out and start pushing the two sides together. So who's happy that he's not going to do that, and who's unhappy?
Well, definitely those who are unhappy are these progressive and left-wing elements that you mentioned that believe that the only way to get Prime Minister Netanyahu to actually take a step and move forward is under U.S. pressure. And this pressure should come by presenting an American plan, coming to the side saying, this is the plan, take it or leave it. It would be very difficult under such circumstances for Prime Minister Netanyahu to come to Israel's greatest ally, the United States, and say, we are rejecting your peace plan. So definitely, people from the progressive side would want such a plan and could be disappointed Thursday with Obama not presenting it. I think for Prime Minister Netanyahu, this will provide some kind of a sense of relief, because he does feel some pressure coming from Washington. He knows that there is an expectation from him to provide some kind of new ideas in his speech in Congress next week. And he would rather do that himself, or keep the possibility to do it himself and not hear any kind of plans or dictates from the American president. So definitely a sigh of relief in the Israeli prime minister's office in Jerusalem.
Nathan Gutman, Washington correspondent for The Forward. So why is Netanyahu coming to the United States? What will he say to Obama, who he hasn't always gotten along that well with, especially on the issue of settlements? And what will he say to Congress? Will he just make the Likud, the Israeli conservative case, or will he unveil something new, hoping for a game-changing moment? Why is he making this trip?
Well, he's making this trip. First of all, he will come, of course, to speak at the annual policy conference of AIPAC, the pro-Israel lobby here in Washington, and he was invited by the leadership of Congress to give a speech in front of a joint meeting of Congress next Tuesday. And basically, he's coming because there is this expectation that we mentioned from the Obama administration to hear something new from the Israelis. The administration does feel that facing September, looking forward at this Palestinian drive for statehood through the United Nations, America does need something from the Israelis to fight back, something that they can come to the Palestinians, to their world, say, listen, Netanyahu is serious with his willingness to go forward. Drop this unilateral statehood idea and let's negotiate. That is the sense of what Washington was conveying to Jerusalem. Now, Netanyahu is, of course, under pressure at home, as always. His coalition is more to the right than he is and wouldn't like to see any concessions right now. So basically, that is the political situation in which Netanyahu is. Now, the question is, what does he do with it? And this question was pretty much resolved by the event on the ground, first of all, by the Palestinian unity government. The fact that Fatah joined forces with the Hamas allows Netanyahu to come to Washington and basically say, right now, we don't have a Palestinian partner. We would really want to talk to the Palestinians, but we cannot talk to a Palestinian government that includes Hamas, which does not recognize Israel, which fires rockets at our citizens. This is something that he believes will resonate very well, especially in Congress, but also with the administration in Washington. So his message could be, we're willing to move forward, but first of all, we need to have a partner on the other side.
Although even with that as a backdrop, I read that Netanyahu laid out new principles for peace with the Palestinians in advance of this trip just yesterday, I guess, including a more explicit acceptance than we've heard before from his mouth of the idea of returning most of the West Bank, except for the deep concentration of Jewish settlements outside Jerusalem, which most people think could be part of a broader deal. But he also added conditions seen as non-starters, like having Palestinian refugees return only to a new Palestine, not to locations their families left in Israel, and some other things. So is Netanyahu trying to take some kind of new step, or is he trying to look like he is, but with major roadblocks so nothing happens? Or what is this new thing all about?
I believe that Netanyahu is trying to please all sides. He's trying to please the Americans who want to hear new ideas. And at the same time, he's trying to please his own coalition that does not feel that this is the time to move forward. And the way to do that is by presenting these ideas. Some of them are new, some of them aren't, but basically talking about Israel's willingness to actually cede land, as he said, to go to some kind of a historic compromise over the land in the West Bank, but to stress that there are conditions for moving forward. First of all, having a Palestinian partner, and then accepting the idea, as you mentioned, that the right of return of Palestinian refugees should be solved within the Palestinian future state, not within the state of Israel. That, of course, goes back to the events that we all saw unfolding on Sunday, when the Palestinians from within the West Bank and from Lebanon and Syria tried to raise the issue of the plight of Palestinian refugees and march into Israel.
What do you think about the Sunday incidents? I mean, if you read Netanyahu's and Abbas's words today in the Times, the rhetoric of both sides is based on the idea that the other wants to deny them statehood at all. And with the unprecedented Palestinian marches on Israel's borders, with Lebanon, Syria, the West Bank, and Gaza that resulted in 12 protester deaths on Sunday, it's all at a heightened thing. I know something happened, some kind of celebrations in Israel and protests in the Arab world on the anniversary of Israel's birth on that date every year, but this was different. Palestinians saw a massacre. Israelis saw a riot. I think both sides genuinely believe their narratives. What's new here, and can President Obama do anything to bridge that?
Well, definitely we have here conflicting narratives, and this is something that Israel is facing since 1948. But in recent years, we see these competing narratives, the Israeli narrative of Jewish independence in its historic homeland, and the Palestinian narrative of the Nakba, the catastrophe that drove Arabs out of their homeland. We definitely see these clashes increasing in recent years. I believe that the change this time was mainly had to do with the circumstances overseas. Palestinians and their supporters are looking around to the Middle East. They see Tahrir Square in Cairo. They see people going out to the streets all over. And there is this attempt to harness this spirit of change within the Arab world, this idea of mass demonstrations, of putting civilians on the front lines for their own cause. And this is why we saw these demonstrations go on this week with the attempt to go to cross the border on the Syrian and the Lebanese side with the events in Gaza and the West Bank. It was definitely an attempt to try to echo this popular sentiment in the broader Arab world and replicate it within the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
What is the Ford reporting, and what is the Israeli press generally reporting about what led to the violence? What led to the shooting? Was it violence on the part of the protesters? Was it self-defense, or was this unjustified?
I think the general notion was that it was probably justified under the circumstances, since Israel and Israeli forces were overwhelmed by the masses of especially Syrians crossing the border and trying to enter in the Golan Heights and possibly enter other Israeli parts as well. And the notion was that the shooting itself was justified, but there are many questions that are being raised on why was Israel in a position in which it was outnumbered by these protesters. There was information in advance that this grand Nakba Day protest is in the works, and still there were very little soldiers on the border. So the few soldiers that were actually there found themselves outnumbered by hundreds and maybe thousands of Syrian protesters, and that's what led to the clashes. On the Lebanese border, the issue is different because most reports now agree that the shooting was done by the Lebanese army, not so much by the Israelis.
Now, as if to put the Palestinian leadership side in front of the American people simultaneously to Netanyahu's visit, Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas did have that op-ed today in the Times, and he made the case for UN recognition of Palestinian statehood in September along the 1967 borders. How worried is Israel about that prospect?
Well, Israel is very worried about this prospect, not because it has that much of a practical meaning in terms of the way Israel will conduct its business. It doesn't really matter if the United Nations General Assembly votes in September in favor of forming or recognizing a Palestinian state in the West Bank, because it doesn't mean that there is a Palestinian state there, and it doesn't mean Israel has to withdraw, and it doesn't change anything on the ground. It does, however, change Israel's position in the international arena, and that is something Israel is increasingly aware of and worried about. Because if the United Nations actually declares that the West Bank is a Palestinian state, then legally Israel is in a very difficult position, and it will be difficult for Israel to come to these international bodies and protect its presence, its occupation of the West Bank, and this relates to the United Nations, to the to bodies of the United Nations, to the International Criminal Court. All these things can come up, and Israel is afraid that this will just strengthen a movement that Israelis are already seeing called this lawfare, this attempt to take the Israeli-Arab conflict to the courts, to the legal arena, and sue Israelis and go after Israelis that are involved in the occupation. So this is something that can definitely help this lawfare movement. It can also Israelis fear, increase the efforts to delegitimize Israel, since there will be an official international stamp on the delegitimization or on the fact that the occupation of the West Bank is no longer legitimate.
And could that actually happen at the UN, or does it need to go through the Security Council, and it can be assumed that the U.S. would use its veto to stop Palestinian statehood being declared at the United Nations?
Well, that is mainly the problem. It does not have to go through the Security Council. It's enough for the United Nations General Assembly to vote on that. In the General Assembly, there is a very easy automatic majority for the pro-Palestinian supporters. So there is not much that the United States, Israel, or the European allies can do to block this. Again, going back to what we said before, the only way to actually make sure that September goes by without recognition of a Palestinian state unilaterally is if the Palestinians will be convinced to drop their bid for statehood by being told either by the Israelis or by the Americans that there is something to talk about, that they can negotiate now, they can reach now a negotiated peace agreement and do not have to go through the UN.
So is that the point of the statehood move, to actually just ratchet up pressure on Netanyahu to negotiate? And obviously Netanyahu is saying that the inclusion of Hamas, which doesn't recognize Israel's right to exist, in the Palestinian Unity Government is a non-starter. But one of Abbas's arguments in the op-ed today is that the new Palestinian unity between Fatah and Hamas can be an opportunity for peace with Israel, not just an obstacle, as Netanyahu portrays it. What's the argument there of how it becomes a possibility, you know, an opportunity rather than an obstacle? And could that, combined with the push for statehood, actually push both sides to the bargaining table in a meaningful way?
Well, I think that the argument for including Hamas in the government is that if Israel does want to reach peace with the Palestinians, it needs to reach peace with a united Palestinian Authority, because there's no sense in giving up land and pulling out settlers and signing a historic agreement with Mahmoud Abbas if he represents only part of the Palestinian territory.
And they say that, but wasn't the argument for all the recent years that Israel should make peace with the Abbas government, and Hamas was pretty much a lost cause for that negotiation, and it was only the fact that there was a peace treaty that would pressure Hamas to drop their denial of a Jewish state over time?
Right, definitely. That argument exists. Palestinians are trying to say that for the sake of the peace process, Israel's interest should be actually to have a united Palestinian front that it deals with, and then any kind of peace agreement will include the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. Of course, the main obstacle remains the fact that Hamas does not accept the conditions set forward by the quartet back in 2006, which include the recognition of Israel abiding by existing agreements and denouncing terror. And while these, until the Hamas actually accepts these ideas, it would be very difficult for Israel to move forward and deal with them. Yep. Of course, on the international arena, we do see some erosion here. In the past, the Europeans definitely supported Israel and the U.S. on this position, and now we're hearing different voices from Europe actually saying that maybe this new unity government should get a chance and maybe that these conditions shouldn't be stressed at this point.
Israeli-Palestinian relations on a new kind of brink. We'll see what happens with Obama's speech on Thursday, Netanyahu's meeting with him, and then speech to a joint session of Congress beginning Friday. Nathan Gutman, Washington correspondent for The Forward. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, the $18 billion jury award for Texaco's pollution of Ecuador's rainforest. Will it be enforced? We'll speak to two very special guests, including one from Ecuador next. Chevron now owns Texaco, and they are on the hook for $18 billion for ruining parts of the jungle. Stay with us.